Welcome to Failing Up, a new podcast where we explore failure.
Why we're afraid of it, why we try to avoid it, and the success that can arise directly from it.
Failure comes in many shapes and forms. It can mean different things to different people.
This show, Failing Up, intends to explore all aspects. These are the stories of people who have experienced profound failures that ultimately led to something positive.
We hope somehow this helps us all learn and grow. Thanks for listening.
My name is Eden.
And my name is Guy. We'll just banter into the show and I'll edit it.
Sure.
So it sounds very natural.
Got it.
But Alex Sulkin, thank you for being here.
Thanks for having me.
This is a newer podcast. This is only our third episode, Eden.
I know.
And
we're virgins.
We had Andy Lassner the first time.
Second time, really.
Well, but he was the first show we released.
Right.
And he was a touching story about how he went from heroin addict to executive producer of The Ellen Show.
Well, how he went from Hasidic Jew in Brooklyn
to heroin addict,
which is a huge leap.
That is.
One of the crazier stories for me was that whole thing about Listerine. And if you go back, you can
listen.
He had unlimited supply of Listerine, and that had made him relapse, basically, Alex. To
the
point.
Alcohol in it?
Yeah. So he started drinking Listerine to the point where his ex-wife turned to him and said, "You stink." And he's like, "I haven't been drinking." She goes, "No, you stink like Listerine." And we're talking that old school stuff that tasted like throw up, basically.
Yeah.
So heavy stuff. And then our second show, that one's probably a little bit heavier, which is it's about this young lady who lost her child because he was strapped in the car seat wrong. And she's on a crusade now to teach people the correct way to do it so that never happens again.
Wow, Jesus.
So, yeah.
So, you have got a lot to
Oh, my God.
Way to put the pressure on him, Guy.
But I don't feel pressure to be funny, at least.
No, don't worry about that.
In fact, be depressing.
Yeah, no, the reason,
that's easy.
The reason we even started this show, one of the things that Eden and I talked about was the thing I heard on Howard Stern, which is Conan O'Brien. And he was like, "Hey, you know, 25 of the worst things ever had to happen in order for me to get the Tonight Show and to, you know, get the Conan O'Brien show." So like basically showing that you have to fail in order to succeed. And maybe we're jumping into that a little bit early, Alec, but what do you think about that?
You have to fail in order to succeed?
Yes, before you succeed.
Well, I don't know that that's always true.
Okay.
I mean, I feel like there are, I mean, I've certainly had my share of failures, but I think that there are plenty of people who just had kind of the easy, not easy, but just a very kind of straight path to success. And I don't think that, you know, they needed to fail. I think that people who do fail often will say, "Oh, well, I needed to fail to get where I am." But if you ask them, would they have preferred to just go straight to happiness and success? I'm sure they'd all say probably yes.
Sure. So who comes to mind immediately that didn't need to fail?
Well, I mean, I'm sure there are like sort of 1,000 millennials who invented an app.
Yeah.
Who have sold it for $50 million.
And they hate those people.
Yeah, they're not yet 30. And, you know, they just went to college and had an idea. And now they have $100 million. So, you know, in terms of show business, certainly there are a lot of people who had failures along the way, even like Carson and things like that.
Right.
He'd had a couple of shows that didn't work. But I think there are a lot of people who, I mean, Howard Stern, I watched Private Parts. Yes, his life wasn't easy, but basically once he got on the radio, people loved him.
True.
And he hasn't looked back.
But he wasn't exactly a resounding success when he first started. He was on college radio, and if you listen back to it, it's unlistenable. It's so bad.
Right.
So he did have a learning curve.
Sure.
But at the same time, obviously, he parlayed that into an even greater success.
Right.
And definitely his success seems to outweigh his failure.
But look at Leonardo DiCaprio. Okay, so he, you know, was on, Growing Pains. And then
he did all these movies that were really big, like What's Eating Gilbert Grape.
Gilbert Grape.
And he got an Academy Award, I think, for that? Or
I think he was nominated, for sure. But, I mean, he has just, you know, I mean, he did Titanic when he was, 25 less.
Ugh.
And I mean, he's a huge, huge star. Even Tom Cruise. I mean, somebody told him he wasn't good looking enough to be on a soap opera. And then he's the biggest movie star anywhere. And that was, you know, when he was 20.
Yeah.
So I don't know about the failure thing. I think the failure thing helps people who have failed to sort of say, well, that's what needed to happen.
So you're shitting on our entire concept here, Alec.
I'm shitting on that concept that you happen to agree with.
Maybe this podcast has to fail before we get
Let me ask you this. When you were a young child, were you a good student in school?
Not really. I mean, I feel like I was never a good worker. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, I feel like I had aptitude for learning, but I just didn't want to work or read or do all that stuff. So I didn't get the greatest grades, no.
Were you a happy kid?
Yes. Yeah, I think so. Pretty much.
Did you work when you were young? Like, did you have jobs when you were 13, 14, 15? Or?
You know, I did. I had summer jobs, lifeguard, house painting, things like that.
Okay.
Working at a Cumberland Farms, which is a CVS type store.
Yes.
But nothing that I was particularly good at or into or driven by. And I would often either quit or get fired.
So what does a young Alec Sulkin think he wants to do for a living?
I think very young Alec Sulkin wanted to be a firefighter.
Okay.
Sort of after that, I think I wanted to be an actor. And then I think I realized that I wanted to be a writer probably in college.
You mentioned getting fired from jobs.
Yeah.
What was the reason you were getting fired? Is it back to the beginning of you didn't feel like doing something?
Well, that was kind of it. I mean, those jobs that I talked about, I think I got fired from working at a gas station because I didn't show up on 4th of July.
Okay.
I think I got fired from a job sanding hardwood floors because I was just pretty bad at it. It just wasn't a good fit, really. But yeah, it was basically for incompetence and not showing up and stuff like that.
Have you ever gotten fired from a job?
Oh, yeah. I was a hostess at a restaurant when I was 23 or something, and I was bad at it. I was really bad at it, and it was for a Japanese restaurant, so I messed up all these takeout orders because I couldn't pronounce it, and it was 3 weeks in, and then they asked me into the office, and they were like, you're fired.
Wow.
Yeah, they don't really tolerate screwing up like that. Probably. Yeah.
Huh.
And by they, I mean Japanese people.
Uh-oh. I know.
Alec.
I
have a history.
Let's
there.
Not get in trouble.
They're all doctors and they do everything better than us.
Yeah. Right? No, they're good. That's what I'm saying.
Why would you hire a white Jewish girl to man your Japanese restaurant?
Well, I mean, if you're pretty, that's kind of what they want.
Yeah.
Right?
They were trying to put a nice local face on it, probably.
We're local. We're homegrown.
I'm from here. And so please come and eat. Was it a good restaurant or no?
I honestly never ate there.
Was it sushi or was it?
Yeah.
Okay.
So then you're a kid. You think you're going to be a fireman. You think you're going to you actor. Did you do anything in school?
I did. Elementary school and high school, I was in the plays. Ooh. And stuff like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Were these musicals?
Sure. I was in some musicals.
Really?
I want to know these musicals.
Yes. Okay.
I was a drama kid, so this is entertaining.
All right. I was in Funny Thing Happened on the Way to the Forum.
Nice.
Great one.
I was in Grease.
Who were you in Grease?
I was Sonny.
Nice.
Yeah.
That's a good role.
Sonny. I was in Jesus Christ Superstar.
Wow. Were you Judas?
No, I was King Herod. So I had the fun song.
Yeah, that's fun.
Yeah. And then, you know, a lot of regular plays within that too.
And then when you're in high school, how many colleges do you apply to? Do you remember?
I think I applied to maybe 4 or 5.
What kind of SAT scores did you have?
I had good SAT scores, which was everybody pointed out as a big problem because they said, well, your grades are not good, but your SATs are good. So it just shows that you're lazy and you're not working hard. So yeah, I applied to 5 colleges and I ended up choosing between Connecticut College and Colby. Colby, is that right? Yeah, Colby in Maine. So
you obviously didn't go to Colby.
No, I didn't. I didn't. No, because Colby I felt was a little too cold. And also Connecticut College, honestly, at that time, it was formerly Connecticut College for Women, so there were a ton of girls there.
Oh,
so I was just
nice.
Kind of way into that.
Was that your first choice of college?
No, my first choice was Dartmouth, where I did not get in.
Well, do you remember that? Do you remember the getting the letter and oh.
Well, I knew I wasn't going to get in. So it wasn't I was basically kind of forced to apply there. I don't remember specifically getting that rejection letter. I don't really remember getting the acceptance letters, the other things either. Yeah. I remember when I was writing the dreaded college essay, mm-hmm. you know, my mom kind of made me, she's like, you go up to your room and just sit up there and write this thing and until it's done. So I went up to my room and I was sitting there for literally a couple of hours and I came back down and the whole time I just wrote, I good, period, and gave it to her. And she, you know, she often thought I was irresistible. So she laughed at that and then I had to go back and write it again. Yeah. Oh.
Well, that's a nice mom.
Yeah.
That's a good mom. That's what moms do. It's like, oh, he can barely even put a sentence together. Right. But I love it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I could do no wrong for her.
And then you go to college. Is that when you start doing, you did do stand up, right?
Yes. Yep.
So you did that in college?
I was in like one of those terrible comedy troupes.
Oh, okay. Yeah, join
the dreaded comedy troupe in college. But I didn't do stand up until after college in New York.
So the comedy troupe was improv?
It was, yeah.
And just not good.
I mean, were they ever good?
I mean,
even the best improv is like, you know,
dragging your friend to an improv show is like, it's like dragging your friend to church. It's
right.
Like, really?
it's rough. I mean, I think that on the sort of sliding scale, some things were okay. Yeah. I don't remember anything specifically about it. I remember there was like one kid who was sort of the Napoleon of the group and, you know, everyone ended up kind of hating him. But it was just the usual college improv troupe stuff.
Okay. And not like these aren't guys that are lifelong friends or that?
No. No, I couldn't even tell you. Really, I think there was a Jeremy in there. I don't know. I don't remember.
Safe bet that there's a Jeremy in the improv.
Right, Jeremy's a good improv.
Or a Josh.
Josh and Jeremy. I think there was a Greg and a Jeremy. I think sounds I remember that. Right.
Yeah. If either of you guys are on Twitter, he's at the Sulk, and you should say something to him. Right. Remembering you, he's like, "It's Phil, damn it, fuck you, Alec." <I know>. So you're in college. What was your major in college?
English.
You actually thought in college, that amazes me, if you answer the answer yes, that you could write for a living?
I think I was thinking that. You know, honestly, I was thinking more possibly at the time something like advertising,
yeah.
Just because I felt like I would be good at that. But, you know, I wrote for the high school paper, and I think I wrote some stuff in college for one of the papers, and I just felt like when I started to do stand-up, I always knew that I would be a better comedy writer. Like I thought my material was better than I was on stage. Mm-hmm. Like I didn't have much of a persona up there. But I did feel like I could write jokes okay. And so I thought maybe that would be something that I could do.
So you graduated college.
I did.
And you said you started doing stand-up out after college.
Right. Not right after. Actually, you know, I think we probably talked about this before, but I worked at Saturday Night Live right out of college. So when I was a senior in college, I got an internship at Saturday Night Live. So I was there for my senior year. And then the 2 years afterward, I was a writer's assistant there. And then I got fired from there, and then I started doing stand-up, just okay. Kind of as a, well, I might as well now.
And getting fired from SNL, that's not like a failure, right? I mean, because...
That was, yeah.
Is it?
Totally. I mean, I was really bummed out about that, and especially the way that it went down, and I've told this story before, but I was basically fired so Regis Philbin's daughter could have that job. And she went on...
But who is she?
She's actually a successful writer now.
Is she?
Her name is J.J. Philbin. She writes for New Girl. And she's apparently a wonderful person and a very talented writer. And I always like go on podcasts and curse her. But she went on her dad's show and basically looked to camera and said, "Hey, Lorne, like I want a job on Saturday Night Live." And
yeah.
My position
That's
was totally expendable.
So you were like literally the lowest man on the totem pole.
Pretty much, yeah. I mean, writer's assistant there and then means something a little different than it does now. Like now, writer's assistants are, you know, really kind of dealing with scripts and stuff like that. But then it was more just like organizing dinner.
Almost like PA work.
Totally.
Now,
who's what the interns do probably now.
Who's right. on Saturday Night Live when you were on?
Well, that was what was great. It was the last, when I was an intern, it was the last year of like Mike Myers and Chris Farley wow. and those people. Wow. And then when I was a writer's assistant, it was the first years of like Will Ferrell and Molly Shannon and, you know, Daryl Hammond and those people.
Yeah.
That was great.
Mm-hmm. When they fire you, is it because, I mean, at least with the actors or the principals on Saturday Night Live, I know there's kind of like a, it's almost like, oh, they just don't get re-signed. They think they're still right. going. Was there that kind of aspect or are they like, get out of here?
No. Yeah. I mean, there's the off season. And so this producer called me and told me that what was happening. He told me, he was very nice and I still am friendly with this guy, but he basically told me the whole reason, you know, said the J.J. Philbin thing and sorry and whatever. So,
yeah.
Yeah.
And looking back on that, is mm-hmm. that, are you like, I'm so glad that happened or no?
It's hard to say that because it was such a fun, exciting job. And I always wanted to work there as a writer. And I think I would have had I been able to stay. But it did kind of motivate me a little bit to certainly to do stand up and to get a little more serious about, because I no longer had like a clear path to a job. Right. And so I had to, you know, start hustling a little more and putting together my material and all that kind of stuff.
Yeah. And you were stand up in New York, mm-hmm. in the city. And I know, and I don't know why I'm blanking, but I know you did stand up with a bunch of very talented guys, some who are still doing stand up, right?
Right.
Like, who are some people that you did stand up with?
Well, like Jim Gaffigan.
Yes.
Yeah, he's amazing. And he was already great when I was just starting. So he had been doing it for a little while already. But I performed at this shitty place every weekend. And he always performed there as well. And we all worshipped him. But yeah, there were a lot of guys who are kind of still doing it. I mean, there were people who were like on Jim Gaffigan's level who I used to be on shows with, but they were already like way ahead, like the, you know, like sort of like Todd Barry and people like that. But a lot of my friends who started the same time I did are now very successful writers too, like John Goldblatt, like aka Julius Sharp, and John Viner, and all these people who now have nice writing careers. We all kind of started at the same time.
That's awesome. And yeah. So is that by design? Like, do you guys have a click where it's like, hey, I'm going to bring this guy on board because he's so funny? Or
totally.
Okay.
Well, and that happens a lot still now.
Yeah.
Like on shows that we're working on, you know, we'll recommend each other and it's great. I mean, and John Viner's a guy I actually went to high school with, and so it's been nice, and we were good friends there, so it's been nice to continue to work with him through the years.
When did you meet your writing partner?
In college.
Okay.
Yep.
Wellesley Wilde.
Correct.
That's his name. And he's the I feel like you're like... You're the face of that, of the duo.
The two teams.
Does he ever do a podcast? Does anybody ever talk to
no,
him?
No, he doesn't like it. He doesn't really like that stuff.
Yeah.
No. And actually, we're no longer partners. We're
really?
We still work together on certain things, movie things, but on the TV side, we're no longer writing partners.
Interesting.
Yeah.
So now, do you have something in development?
I do. I sold a pitch to Fox about a month ago, and so I'm going to start working on that and writing that up in the next couple of months.
Okay, congratulations. Yeah.
Thank you, thanks.
So let me ask you a question logistically.
Sure.
If this thing goes to pilot, gets picked up, you have a TV show going, and then one day I get a thing that says, hey, tickets to the Alex Sulkin show, and I'm like, all right, cool. And I get them. I'm going to be in the audience to watch your show.
Yeah.
Should I contact you on Twitter and say, hey, Alec, I'm coming to your show? Or do I just be cool, be in the audience, and, you know, and afterwards be like, hey, that was really cool?
That's a weird question, but...
I'm still trying to follow.
No, here's a couple of things about that.
I'm trying to see if it's douchey or not.
No, not douchey, yeah. But let's...
First of all, he's a guy, so it's not douchey. Right. If it were a girl, it'd be a different story.
So let's go back a little bit. It's going to be a single camera, no studio audience, so that takes the whole scenario away.
Fantastic. I really asked because I had tickets to Dad's.
Ah.
And I was like, if I go, should I say something beforehand? Or should I just be in the audience and then be like, that was fun?
No, absolutely,
you should. Dad's?
Yeah. Well, I had tickets to see Dad's.
But you didn't...
I did not. I ended up not being able to go. I did. I really wanted to go.
Who there were those empty seats?
Oh, Rhea Brusso was the guest. person that.
Oh, died. And the guy from The Sopranos.
Yes,
he exactly. was so funny. He was such a nice guy.
Yeah,
yeah. No, you should totally reach out and say something in that scenario with me or anyone else who you know like me.
Okay.
Yeah. Absolutely.
So we're at. Let's go. We're talking about Fox anyway. Let's talk about dads, okay. right? I like dads personally. It came with a lot of controversy before the show ever even started.
Yes.
People were like, oh, it's racist.
Yeah.
It's like no episode has been played yet, but you, okay, it's racist.
Right.
Is there really no such thing as bad press?
No, that was bad press. That really got us off to a bad start. And I think a lot of that had to do with just having Seth's name on something. It can really help you get a show made.
Yeah.
But then it can also come back to kind of bite you because I think the press has sort of a preconceived notion about what Seth's comedy is going to be. Now, of course, the truth of the matter is that Seth never wrote a word for Dads. He had zero involvement. He just was nice enough to kind of help us get it started. But the controversy came out of the fact that we had an Asian girl on the show, Brenda Song.
Right.
You might know who she is. And in the pilot episode, as a joke to sort of win over some Asian businessmen, we had her dress up in like a Japanese schoolgirl outfit. And she looked stunning. And I mean, let's get that out there. I mean, she looked great.
Yeah.
But people decided that that was incredibly racist. And now Brenda herself did not give a shit about it the entire way. And my argument about it was that it was always way more sexist than racist. You know, it was just like a lot more like exploitative of women than it was like, an Asian slam. So, you know, but basically the thing is that there's this Asian Defamation League, and it's the president is this guy named Guy Aoki, another guy.
Really?
And it's, you know, he has to keep himself in business. Like it's sad to say, but it's like good for him when there's controversy out there because it keeps him working.
It's like a cop looking out to see who's breaking laws.
Right, jaywalking. Right.
Exactly.
So, you know, there was a lot of kerfuffle about that before the show even started, and I do think that it kind of hurt it, you know, because it gave people an excuse to say like, well, not only is it racist, but it's not funny. And I think that it just kind of, you know, it hurt us from the start. And I think that was one of those shows where, had we been on CBS, I think it would still be on. You know, it was just kind of that very straight down the middle kind of multicam comedy that we grew up with.
Yeah.
And that was the stated goal of the show beforehand. We wanted to just make a show that felt very comfortable and was hopefully funny and it had kind of a familiar premise that everyone could relate to. But yeah, I think that press starting off kind of hurt us.
The cast was great too. I mean, you had Martin Mull, for example, Giovanni Ribisi,
yeah.
Seth Green. I mean, like it's a all-star cast. How does that show? I mean,
yeah, no, it was a good cast, and they were all really good and game, and you know, excited to do whatever we asked them to do. So you know, it was overall a very good experience.
When the show is happening, like, do you have a feeling like, oh, this might not last?
Well, it was tough because basically what happens a lot on these shows is they get picked up for a certain number. It's usually like 6 or 13 to start with. Mm-hmm. And then at a certain point they tell you, okay, we're going to pick up more. And so that time came and they said, we're going to pick up what they call the back 9, because we had 13 and you have 22 episodes a season. And they said, congratulations, guys, we're picking up the back 9. So that was a huge moment for us. We were all very excited because that means you'll get a full season and that gives you a much better shot at getting a second season. Mm-hmm. And then somewhere in the middle of that, they said, oh, just kidding, we're picking up only the back 6, which just was a bad sign. And the guy who was head of Fox at that time, a guy named Kevin Riley, never really liked the show. He's not a fan of multicam comedy. I think the only reason that he picked it up was because of Seth and because Fox had really screwed up by not buying the movie Ted. And so they didn't, whatever Seth was going to come out with next, I think they were just going to blindly buy. But he didn't like the show. And so, you know, they kind of scaled that order back. And then that's when we knew it probably wasn't going to go any further.
when you get the word that it's not going to happen, is that like your kid doesn't make the baseball team? I know you don't have any kids, but like what right. level of disappointment is that for
well,
you?
Interestingly enough, at the time it was a relief. You know, I think that thinking about it kind of globally, it would have been nice had it kept going and to have a show that's on 2, 3, 4, 5 years. That would be great. But at the time, it was so difficult. It was such a slog to get anything done with the network and with the press at that time that it felt like a relief, you know, when we heard that it wasn't coming back. Because then it was like, okay, well, now we can move on to other things and
right.
just kind of put this behind us.
So, Ted, obviously, we were talking about that. That is a... So, you know, I feel like we're going kind of like ups and downs, right?
Right.
You've had some... Let me ask you this. When you have a show that doesn't work out, even though there is a relief, I assume there's some sort of sense of disappointment. Is
sure.
there anything... Do you have to, like, kick yourself in the ass and get back going kind of thing? Or is it just... You're used to this and just keep on rolling.
Yeah, I think you just got to kind of keep on rolling. It was never I mean, it was disappointing, but it was never like a depression and like, oh my God, I can't do anything. I don't want to go, you know, I don't want to work on anything else. It was like, well, yeah, we have the next thing, you know, we got to go on to the next thing and let's just do that.
Okay. Oh, I have some questions about, I mean, we kind of went ahead of it, but I want to talk about Family Guy a little
sure.
bit. So you actually joined the show right after they came back from being off the air for
correct.
A while.
Correct. So 2004.
There has to be some sort of like, I don't know. I feel like maybe this is insulting, but the older ones, the pretty you ones, they're just not as, they're not as good.
I agree
right?
with that.
Okay.
Yeah.
So I felt a little bit bad. So there has to be some sort of like,
yeah.
we started like. It got so much better when I got
it. You know, it did, and I think that's for a few reasons. I think that the times changed and people's sense of humor changed a little bit, and people were a little more demanding about what was funny and what wasn't. And I think that when they came back, you know, the way that they came back because of the fans' demand, basically, and the fans buying all kinds of DVDs and stuff like that, then all of a sudden Family Guy had this momentum and Fox gave them a lot of money for the writing staff, so they were able to hire more people, and it was just, you know, everybody was very enthused when it came back. So I think those first like 3 seasons when it came back were the best, I think.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And then you're a writer, you're an executive producer of Family Guy, and then one day is it like you decide, "Hey, that's it. I'm off."
Well, you know what happens is, so with Fox, I got what's called an overall deal. And that's basically like they hire me for 3 years. And it's expected in that time that, yes, I'm right now I'm working on Family Guy. But at some point during these 3 years, they want me to develop a show for them.
Right.
And so when that time comes, and that it was with Dad's, you develop a show and you leave Family Guy. And
right.
so then that's kind of the way that it goes.
I feel like the last time I interviewed you was right before Dad's, and you're like, yeah, you're going to slowly, my name's going to come off of Family Guy.
Right.
Which it has. Now I see Biggins and Bo,
right?
Have
yep.
kind of replaced you and Wellesley. But you haven't left the show, though. Like,
you do
Jesus.
Right.
So
yes.
that there was like a whole Jesus episode
yes.
not too long ago. So, like, as you said to me years ago, like, yeah, you'll slowly see me going away on that show. Almost every week, I'm like, oh, there's Alec again.
Right.
And I'm saying at least 3/4 of the episodes. Am I crazy?
No, that's right. That's correct. Yeah, they're nice enough to have me come in and do, like, a couple voices here and there, which is great.
You want to. You have fun doing that.
I love it. It's really easy, and it's, you know, if you can ever get work at doing voiceovers, it's the easiest money in the world. So, I mean, it's great. I love that they still have me do it. It's lucky.
I remember an early episode, Decently Funny, that I interviewed you. I kind of like asked you about a specific... I was like, oh yeah, I remember this one time I heard you, and you're like, yeah. And then afterwards, I'm like, yeah, what an ass you are. Because I mean, seriously, Alec is 100... Like, you might be 5 voices in an episode, in a single episode.
That happens sometimes. Not anymore, but yeah, that used to happen a lot.
It's very funny. I don't know. It makes me laugh. I think... there was one really recently that you were doing. It was... Maybe it was the Jesus episode. I don't know. One of them, I was like, that one Something hit me really well, Alec.
Oh, that's nice.
Do you have a favorite?
Favorite Family Guy episode?
Yeah.
I do, actually. I have a couple, but one of them is definitely the one where Brian and Stewie are locked in the bank vault.
Yes.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Which is a really good one. And that was written by Gary Jannetty, who is like the funniest guy in the world. Fantastic writer.
Were you there for the episode where Brian died, or were you gone by that point?
I think I was there for the writing of it, but not there when it aired.
Okay. Was the intention for him to come back the
yes.
whole time? It was.
Yeah.
So, you know, there are fans
that's
that got tattoos.
I know. That's the beauty of animation. It's like, it's not real.
Yeah.
We have to bring it back whenever we want.
Exactly.
I actually, not to pat myself on the back, but if you ask my friends, I called it. I'm like, there's just no way Brian's long-term off the air. But yeah, I thought
You're
the
smart.
Reaction was amazing.
It really was. It was great that people gave a shit about it, you know?
Yeah. I mean, he was like trending on Twitter, RIP Brian, and pictures of him. And I'm like, you guys realize you're mourning a cartoon character.
Not only a fictional TV character, but a cartoon character.
Well, people were pretty upset when, you know, when Miss Piggy and Kermit broke up.
That's true. That was bigger for me. That was a really, you know, my whole youth went away at that point.
The brilliant thing I like about Family Guy is that, you know, even when you say like, oh, I like that episode, So much of the episodes are so good and there's so many parts to them that they all kind of get blurred in my head.
Yeah, that makes sense. Just the nature of the show that it jumps all over the place.
It's perfect for me because I have ADD.
Right.
So it's like, I love it.
It matched up well with this generation and their viewing habits, I think.
Yeah, and I just find myself all the time kind of quoting it sometimes in like random scenarios, and friends that never watch Family Guy are like, what is she on?
And we've talked about the South Park thing before. I guess I won't rehash that. But you claim that you guys kind of, you were indifferent to the whole South Park bashing, you guys.
I was. I think that there were some people that were maybe annoyed by it. But I felt like we should either just completely retaliate or do nothing. And they ended up doing nothing. But honestly, you know, I think that It seems to be a bigger deal to the South Park guys than it is to the Family Guy people.
Okay.
I think that there's a general resentment of Family Guy because at first the rap on the show is that it's a copy of The Simpsons, and then, you know, I think the South Park guys were pissed because Family Guy became so successful and it's on a major network, and it just kind of generates more money for people there than South Park does. And I think that annoys them.
So I think we know who's an adult here.
Right.
So let's talk about the ripoff aspect since that's in the news right now, big time. Fat Jewish.
Sure.
Fat Jewish.
Oh, yeah.
Is a quote unquote ripoff. What do you think about this whole controversy?
Well, I mean, it sounds to me like people have known about it for years.
Yeah.
This is like a 5-year-old story that now is suddenly coming to light. That being said, I mean, I think that the guy seems like a jerk. I mean, to do that, to take people's stuff and like attribute it to yourself, that's like, it's so, you know, the opposite of what Twitter is kind of about. It's like you want to show off your own abilities a little
bit.
Yeah.
And the fact that he's doing that, it's just stupid. And and his apologies are just terrible.
Awful.
Yeah.
And he's blaming his intern. And like, you know.
Yeah, who's his intern, I gotta say. Because it's like, who would put on a resume, I interned for the Fat Jew? Like, what?
And now he's saying like, oh, well, the online part is just a small part of what I do. There's the rosé and the modeling.
I didn't even know about the rosé until he brought it up in the Vulture article.
It's insane. And I mean, for him to say that is ridiculous because the online stuff was the only reason that he has any of the other stuff.
Yes.
So, you know, his whole quote-unquote empire is built on, you know, plagiarism.
Yeah.
I mean, it's just, it's really annoying. But the thing is that people are giving him so much shit so that I don't feel like there's a need really to kind of further hop on that. But if I had to come down on one side, I'm definitely not on his side.
Okay. Is this the same or is this different? I just had a conversation with a friend about this. You know, people are all up in arms about the Fat Jewish and that other guy, I forget his name, but
fuck Jerry.
Right. But, and I'm just going to call it out. I think this guy's terrific and, you know, no bad things to say about him. Tommy Chong sometimes will take a meme or a picture that's clearly somebody else's, post it on Twitter, same kind of thing. He doesn't attribute anything. He uses the same captions, and he makes money off his Twitter account, right? Maybe not as much as the fat Jewish is making, but people ignore certain people doing it. Am I crazy? Is that?
Well, I didn't know this about Tommy Chong.
Yes.
I didn't. I mean, to.
And I'm not just calling him out, but no, an example. You know?
Right. I think there's something about who the fat Jew is that makes him particularly obnoxious.
Mm-hmm.
I think the fact that Tommy Chong had a very long, successful career before whatever it is he's doing now that, you know, made him famous.
True.
Is in his favor, whereas the fat Jew guy, he's only famous because he sort of jumped on the back of these other people.
Right.
So to me, and also like, really, like, who gives a shit about what Tommy Chong is doing at this point?
He's probably high, you know?
Right. Yeah. I'm sure a lot of people say that as well. And Tommy Chong doesn't seem like he's trying to get something.
Yeah.
He's already gotten what he's going to get.
Yeah.
Whereas the fat Jew is like trying to take and get and like, you know.
He's not even trying to make it his own, which is really bothering me. It's like he, word per word, just steals it.
Yeah.
Like,
it's ridiculous.
It's very sad.
Yeah.
What?
Oh, I thought you had something.
I did, actually. I was thinking, you know, as a comedian, sometimes I'll go on stage or I'll be on a comedy show with something and I'll hear a joke and it's so similar to something I thought of.
Right.
I'm like, well, I got to kill that one.
Yeah.
And I understand this. People unintentionally, funny is kind of topical and like sometimes funny is going to overlap and you're going to find the same thing funny. And it's not uncommon that two comedians come up with the same joke.
Right.
I've seen a lot of it on Twitter where people, there's just like a, you know.
But you can tell when that is unintentional,
yeah.
You know, and the people that, like yourself, if you do that, as you say, you'll take it out of your routine,
totally.
You know, it's, and that's the difference. I mean, it's disappointing and it's annoying, but you immediately don't say like, well, I'm going to keep doing that. You say, well, I'm going to get rid of that.
Well, what bothers me a lot about the fat Jewish is that he continues to do that. And now he just credits people. But that's like, still, I don't need you to be a curator of funny.
No.
Like,
well, and if you are, that's a different thing. I mean, then, you know,
then pay people that you're stealing.
Right. Right.
You know,
has anybody ever said to you, Alec, one of the jokes you did in that episode, that's right from one of my tweets.
In Family Guy?
Yeah. Or anything that you've written.
Yeah, you know, not with Family Guy, but sometimes, and it hasn't happened at all recently, but like in the past, I feel like people have said, oh, that was similar to something I tweeted. And then, you know, I'll say, well, show me what it was.
Yeah.
And either they can't, or they'll show me something that's not in any way similar, or they'll show me something that is similar, and I've done this a couple times where I'll then just retweet them and say, oh, this guy apparently made that joke first, and
right.
Whatever.
Somebody told me once that Sarah Silverman stole their jokes that they had posted on MySpace and used it in her comedy.
I think the fact that they're using MySpace is my favorite.
It was back,
joke.
Back in the MySpace era, but yeah, I couldn't. I was like,
unlikely.
Definitely, she definitely did.
Yeah,
that.
Yeah.
Like, there's no question about it.
Someone told me Billy Eichner took one of my jokes.
Really?
Yeah. Just about I only sleep with people who are verified.
That's funny.
Yeah, and then he did it like 3 days later, and people were writing to me being like, "He did your joke."
Hmm.
I don't care.
I've actually had people who retweet me and then like a few days later do a variation of the joke and I'm going, you know, they probably in their head thought they thought it up afterwards and don't even realize that my joke's three back in their timeline.
Right.
They did the same exact thing. And you know, again, those people, most people aren't out to just copy and paste
their shit. People are dumb.
They are dumb. 2011, I'm going to rehash some old shit, Alec.
Sure.
And I'm going to quote right from Wikipedia.
Okay.
In March 2011, Sulkin created a controversy by posting the following joke on Twitter. If you want to feel bad about this earthquake in Japan, Google Pearl Harbor death toll.
Yeah.
Sulkin made the comment one day after the 2011, what is that, Tohoku earthquake, which killed over 10,000 people in Japan.
You would have been fired from the same restaurant I was.
Right, that's absolutely right.
Just the number three, please. So when that happens mm-hmm. for you, I mean, that it blows up immediately, right?
Right, yeah.
What's the original, your original feeling? Is it defiance? Like, are you like, fuck that, man?
Yes. Yeah, that was my original feeling, which lasted for like 2 hours. And then I took it down and apologized. And as I said at the time, when I wrote the joke, the death toll, not that it makes it much better, but when I wrote the joke, the death toll was like around 100.
Right.
And then it turned out to be 10,000. And so, you know, obviously that wasn't hilarious.
Should have just brought the Holocaust then.
Oh, well, I have many times yeah. on Twitter, but that doesn't seem to upset. You know, the people that that would upset are all dead.
That's so true. Well, you know, now that you bring it up, I'm going to give a confession. Way before when I first started on Twitter, I followed the Sulk, and he made a Holocaust joke, and I didn't know the guy, and I unfollowed him. And then Nuzzy's like, we're going to have the Sulk on our show. I'm like, I unfollowed that guy for a Holocaust joke. And he's like, you know he's Jewish, right? I'm like, no. And I followed him back, and I felt pretty dumb about it.
Someone yelled at me on Twitter this week about making a cancer joke. And I was like, I didn't have cancer, but I got double mastectomy, so yeah. I should be able to say that joke.
I think you have.
I'm like
range.
Half cancer. That makes a difference.
When you, not to take it off that, but when you tweet that, first you're defiant. Does anybody contact, like, when any of your friends and say, like, Alec? Like,
yeah. Well, yeah. I mean, some people didn't care. Like, Seth didn't care. I was actually with him at the time. We were in Boston scouting for Ted One. And he didn't give a shit. But yeah, some other people were like, well, it wasn't that they contacted me and said, hey, you know, what the fuck? I talked to them and asked them what they thought about it. Mm-hmm. And they said, yeah, you should probably take that down.
And then when you take it down, like, yeah. Is there a feeling like, okay, the whole Twitter thing for me is over?
No, I didn't. I mean, I didn't really feel like the whole Twitter thing was over, but I definitely felt like I needed for there to be some time to pass so that people definitely weren't, like, you know, still so pissed about it.
And did you or did you not end up gaining followers throughout
I that whole totally thing? Did yeah.
Maybe I should just do more of that.
See, so yeah. A failure turns into a positive.
right.
But let's be honest, now Alec, you're like way removed from Twitter.
Yes.
How often do you tweet? Once a week, maybe?
Maybe. Yeah, maybe.
Oh, I've seen you more than that.
Yeah, it varies. Like, it's you know, sometimes it'll even be still be a couple times a day, but then sometimes there are, you know, 3, 4, or 5 days in between. Twitter is just not as exciting as it used to be for me. It's not what it once was.
What happened to it?
Well, I just think, I don't know, it's like it's almost like everything's been done. It's not. Yeah. That's not true. I mean, people always
tweeted that. It was like, you guys, it's yeah. been done. We're not see? Funny anymore.
Yeah. See, we've reached the end. So people will always find like new funny jokes to tweet, but it's just not as exciting. You know, with Instagram, it's like you get a visual, and you know, it's there's just something about it. When it first started, it felt so exciting and new and. And now it just doesn't feel that way anymore.
It does not. That's no. unfortunate. It was such a fun time.
I keep threatening to leave, and I think I am really going to.
Really?
In the next couple of months.
Are you going to Twitter side? You're going to kill your account?
No, I'll leave it up there, but I just think that I will not tweet anymore.
Wow.
Yeah.
Bold.
That will be a sad day.
I'll be sad.
I hope it starts a movement of people realizing that It's not really worth it anymore.
What's the other platform you're moving to? Is that what you're saying? You want everybody to be on Snapchat?
No.
We'll do it, Alec. I swear.
No, I think just it's just...
Guys, just text me, okay?
Yeah, right. Exactly.
I do have Alec's phone number now that he's on the show, so I will be texting him my tweets instead of tweeting.
Yeah, emojis. You can do that.
Started a
Feel
monster
free to
here.
Do that.
So how about we can go to another positive? There are, I mean, many positives in your career. From Ted, I mean, Ted was humongous, right? Did you imagine it was going to be as big as it was?
No.
Really?
Not at all, no.
I remember, and maybe you'll want to admit to this, and maybe I'll have to cut this out of the show, I feel like when the movie was going on, like when it was first being shot, you kind of came to us and were like, yeah, it's okay.
Yeah, well, I mean, it was hard to imagine it being successful until... I mean, because all the versions we were watching, they didn't have the bear in it.
Right.
You know? And so
oh, yeah.
It was like, when we were shooting the movie, it's actors talking to nothing. And then when we saw early screenings of the movie, it was still actors talking to nothing or actors talking to a very kind of crudely rendered bear. And then finally, when the bear was fully made, you know, that's when you started to think like, oh, actually, this is kind of cool because the bear was cute. The bear was funny. The bear looked right. And you know, so things just kind of fell into place very well for that first one, for sure.
And the Flash Gordon tie-in, amazing. Like,
right.
I think that movie, and I haven't seen Ted 2 yet. I'm so bummed that I have not seen it yet. But I think Ted is amazing. And what I've heard about Ted 2, Alec, and this is not just an ass kiss, Eden, I promise. Obviously, a lot of sequels don't live up to the whole thing. Other sequels, they might be as good. I heard that this like might even be funnier than the original.
Well, you know, it's funny. I kind of feel that way. I feel like in certain ways, Ted 2 is funnier. I feel like it has more jokes, maybe some jokes that are better, some bigger laughs. But it's hard to top the original just because it is the original.
Right.
So, you know, it's sort of, I think, you know, might be a tie.
And I feel like when it came out, would you consider Ted 2 a success?
No.
Really?
I mean, it's a success in that it made money. You know, it didn't lose money. So
right.
That's a success. But the difference between Ted 1 and Ted 2 is staggering. So I think people expected, like, with The Hangover or with 21 Jump Street or something, those sequels come out and they did slightly better than the first one because everybody liked the first one and people say, hey, let's rush and see the second one. For whatever reason, that just did not happen. So the difference in what Ted 1 made and what Ted 2 made is huge.
Right.
And so you'd have to say that it's, in a way, a failure.
So how does that affect you, or does it affect you in that?
Well, happens? It does. I mean, it's not like it's taking money out of... Well, it is, but... So, you know, I get paid a certain amount for the writing of it, which for a sequel is naturally larger than the original. And so that was great. But we actually got, which is very rare for writers, we got a small percentage of the movie. So we're, you know, we're fucking counting our money before the thing came out because we're like, well, it's probably going to do at least what the first one did. And we said, well, if it does that, we'll make this. And and so then that just didn't happen at all. So it's kind of like money that we thought we would get. We just didn't get.
Can it still happen with DVD sales and all that stuff?
It'll never be what the first one was or what we thought it was. But yeah, I mean, we will get some money from that for sure. I mean, I got some money from the Western, for God's sakes, even though that was sort of perceived as like not doing well or whatever.
Right.
But it actually did make, you know, its money back and more on the DVDs or whatever, video on demand. And so I can only imagine that if I'm seeing checks from the Western, that I will also continue to get stuff from Ted 2.
A Million Ways to Die in the West.
Right.
You don't even want to call it by its name.
No, well, the name's just too long.
It's really long. Yeah. I don't even want to.
And how do you feel about that movie in hindsight?
You know, I feel like it was sort of a noble failure. I think that if you put somebody else in that movie, it probably would have done better. You know, like a Paul Rudd or somebody like that. Someone that people generally like and embrace for whatever reason.
As opposed to Seth.
Seth, who people just don't really know how to feel about him, or they don't like him.
Really? He seems like I thought he was a pretty universally liked guy, no?
I don't think so. I think that...
Really?
I mean, I like him, and I think that Family Guy fans like him.
Too liberal?
And it's not that. I think that he sort of comes off as like the smug rich kid in some ways. But that being said, I thought he did a good job in the movie. I think the movie was funny. I think it was a little too long. I think that there were, you know, certain segments that we could have just gotten rid of. I think that there was a slightly better way to structure the movie that we had a lot of fights about along the way. Mm-hmm. And, you know, none of those things happened. So, you know, there you go. But that being said, I do think in like 10 years, people will just watch it and say, oh, that's funny. And they won't really remember like, oh, it didn't do quite as well
that's
as people
like Princess
wanted.
Princess Bride. People, it didn't do well. And
well, Shawshank.
Yeah.
Didn't do well at all either.
Yeah. Now I can't stop watching it.
I know.
Like,
so
literally.
Do you learn anything from these sorts of quote unquote failures, do you think?
Well, in a way you do. I think you realize that, you know, there's certain things that happen in the failures that you say, like, okay, well, we don't want to do that again.
Right.
I think we realize that people just don't, in general, young people do not like Westerns. And in general, young people do not like things that happened before 1990, really. So there's kind of a study.
That's why they don't like me. I happened before 1990. Right.
So there's like, you know, sort of a weird audience study thing that shows that young people just do not like movies set in the past. And I think that's one thing. You know, I think we all loved the Western. We loved Blazing Saddles. And, yeah. You know,
oh, my favorite movie ever.
Yeah, we thought that this would be... We thought we had a funny take on the Old West, and it just turns out that people really just don't care.
So how do you personally, how do you deal with failure or success? Like, you seem like the most even-keeled person I've ever met.
I try to be.
Do you have those like high highs and low lows, or like when something doesn't work, like eh?
I guess I don't, not high highs and low lows. I feel like you kind of learn to expect, you prepare for the worst and hope for the best kind of thing. So, you know, when Ted 1 happened and it was a smashing success, I mean, that was good, but it was also a little confusing because part of you is like, I don't exactly know why this is happening. And so the same thing happens when things are failing. You're like, well, I can't quite tell what went wrong here, but I know something went wrong and I just have to deal with it.
But there's no depression.
Not really. I mean, there's a general depression.
Smoke a lot of pot. Something.
Well, I don't do that anymore.
Really?
Yeah.
How long have you not smoked pot?
A couple years.
Wow.
Yeah.
That was like a big part of Alec.
It was. Yeah. So, you know, there's not like a big depression. There's a general life depression, but I think that it doesn't go any... Yeah, it doesn't go any farther than that.
Okay, fine. What do you think your... I'm going to ask two-part question. What do you think your biggest failure is across your life and your biggest success?
Oh boy.
What are you most proud of?
Well, I would say the biggest failure is probably Dad's, just because I think that it could have been, for the reasons we talked about earlier, I think that it could have been a success, and it was just a couple of decisions away from making it there, and I hold myself responsible for that. I mean, I wasn't there in the room, but I physically wrote the thing of putting her in that Japanese schoolgirl outfit.
That was you?
Yeah.
Okay.
And so, you know, I think that could have been something that could have been a show that was on the air for years and years, and then I would have $100 million. So that I would consider probably the greatest failure. The greatest success, I think, I would just have to encompass my decade at Family Guy. It was just a lot of fun. I feel like I came up with a lot of funny stuff when I was there. It was great.
The greatest time of your life, in a sense.
Yeah.
Can I ask a follow-up?
Sure, please do.
What's your greatest success that's not related to your career?
Probably I'm engaged.
Oh, that is a success.
Yeah, I think so my relationship right now, I would say, is definitely that.
That's great.
That's awesome. Yeah. How long have you been engaged?
Since November.
And when are you getting married?
We don't have a date.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's the way it's supposed to be.
We've both been married before.
Okay.
And so I think that neither of us are like, oh my God, we have to have this magical special day.
Right. But the funny part is, most of the time when somebody gets engaged, they're like, oh, you know, I got engaged. And if you go the first day, like, when are you getting married? Oh, we don't know yet. But like 2 days later, maybe this is sexist to say, but the girl kind of is like, well, we're going to get married in March of 2017.
Well, I'm not even dating anyone, and I've already planned my wedding.
You know what date it is?
I have a whole Pinterest section for it.
Oh, my God.
Like all women.
2 or 3 years from now. And well, that's awesome, Alec. I'm really glad you found love. That's a beautiful thing. And I know that your fiancé is a wonderful person.
She is.
I follow her on Instagram and Twitter. Cool. She Instagrams more than she tweets.
She does.
And she's like a world traveler. I've seen, and I was kind of talking to Alec before we started here, I feel like she's opened the world up a little bit for you.
She has.
That's great.
Like, I see Alec going to foreign countries where I'm like, Alec is not the kind of guy that goes to foreign countries.
No, I'm not at all. I would rather just sit on the couch all the time. But yeah, she's a really kind of a go-getter and world traveler. I guess.
Where's the wildest place you went, or the best place you went?
Well, my favorite, I love England, and we went there together. But the wildest place was definitely, you know, on safari. literally the wildest place.
Wow. Oh, did you shoot the lion?
Right. With my dentist friend.
Just with, just with the camera, hopefully.
Yeah.
And then I have one more question.
Sure.
What do you want to be remembered for?
Ooh. Interesting. Well, you know, I think a lot of people who are writers want to be remembered for something that they wrote. I think for me, it's like I have a fantasy of somebody going back through, you know, 5, 6, 7 years of Twitter and taking like the best ones and saying, oh my God, he said that. Like, right. Oh my God, look at this. Oh, look how great that is.
You're going to be on a fortune cookie.
Right. Basically.
Hopefully.
So I hope that somebody remembers that for a certain time, like I was very good at that.
Okay.
Yeah.
Huh.
My career as a writer is very young still.
Mm-hmm.
So what advice would you give to other young writers like myself?
Well, okay. This, and I get asked this frequently.
Uh-oh.
No. It's a good question. First of all, is you should always have a spec script mm-hmm. ready. You should have one that is like a current show.
Right.
You know, something that something that you like. Yeah, something that's on air or just recently off air.
Dads.
Yeah, have a dads. That'll be a good calling card. And then the second spec script you should have, you should make it creative. You should, there was a guy who wrote a spec Muppet show. You know, there was a guy, when now of course the Muppet show's back, but this was when it was off. There was a guy who wrote a spec Cheers on 9/11.
Wow.
You know, there was a guy who wrote the famous Some Friends where somebody commits suicide or something like that. It's good to, like when the specs that I wrote when I ended up getting my first job, Wellesley and I wrote an Everybody Loves Raymond where it turns out that Ray and Tony Soprano went to elementary school together and like they were sort of trapped in their house during a snowstorm. And so it was
like a Family Guy episode to
right.
me.
So it was sort of like a creative kind of thing. And right. I think that when you hand people scripts that they haven't seen before, they get excited because everybody reads, you know, the same 5 shows over right. and over again. And if you give them something different, it really gives them an excuse to look at you and say, okay, this person stands out. This person is creative on their own. And then the second piece of advice that is critical is, you know, obviously you're from here. You have a lot of friends out here. Presumably some of them are...
Who said I had friends?
I can tell by this house.
What?
But presumably some of them are in the business. It's just important to stay friends with them. You know, ask them for advice. Ask them to go out to lunch. Like, you know, ask them what you can do. Because the more you can stay in their minds as someone who's like hungry and looking for something, they'll remember you. And right. I've had people along the way who have done just that, you know, with me. And in a sort of superficial, vain way, when you go to people and ask them for their advice, it makes them feel, you know, like they're some kind of guru or something. And I think people take a sense of pride in that. And it only adds to your, you know, appeal to them because they said, oh, well, this girl's smart. She's asking me for help. So then they want to help you more. So I think that you should not be afraid to ask those people for help or to stay really on their radar mm-hmm. and just say like, hey, let's grab coffee, let's get a lunch, and what do you think, I'm starting to write this or, you know, whatever.
All right, sleep my way to the top, I got
exactly.
it.
Exactly, that never hurt either.
You know, you made me think of something and tell me if I'm wrong here. Well, in general, spec scripts do not, even if they are about the show, they don't get made if it's a show that's active.
Right.
But am I wrong in that Maggie Mull wrote an episode of Dads, and that was her spec, and that became an actual episode.
You are wrong.
I am?
Yeah, oh. She wrote an episode of, I can't remember, I feel like it was, I want to say New Girl, but that could be wrong. She wrote an episode of something that was very funny. She was the one of the funniest scripts we read by far, but no, it was not an episode of Dads.
Okay, then I'm wrong. So, Alec, we got something on Failing Up that we do every week, and it's a two-part little thing. First and foremost is, we want to give money to your favorite charity.
Okay.
So, what is your favorite charity?
Oh, boy, you asked me that so fast. Well, I give every year to this thing. A friend of mine sort of is involved with it, something called the Rape Foundation.
Okay.
Which has to do with cancer. No, I'm kidding.
That'd be great.
Yeah, it's sort of self-explanatory.
Right, okay.
But yeah, I guess that's what it would
be. Okay, that's what we're going to give. It's going to be between $50 and $1,000. Wow. Depending on how you answer the following questions.
Oh my God, how are you going to come up with $1,000?
I'm just going to take it out of my own pocket,
wow,
believe it or not.
What?
Wow.
Yeah. If it happens, it comes out of my pocket. That's how this show is going right now.
Well, I'll chip in.
We had a sponsor, but they fell through, so it's coming out of my pocket. It's fine.
I'll match it, whatever
okay.
it is.
So, Alec, give me a number between 1 and 50.
1 and 50?
Mm-hmm.
33.
Okay, let's find 33 here. Okay, I have a number, but now you pick in this bag here, okay? And
so
I will tell you, the numbers are either just one time or it's two times. So it's either going to be one time this number or two time this number.
Okay.
So pick out of this bag here.
All right.
This is so unnecessary, all this moving.
Now, it's probably like an 8 or whatever, but it's either a one-time or a two-time. What do we have here, Alec?
It is a one... I think it's a one-time.
One-time?
Oh, wait a minute. No.
Uh-oh.
I can't tell. Yeah, that's a one-time, right?
Let's see. Yeah, it's a one and an
okay,
X.
Okay, because you could look like a two and a slash.
That's true. So I will... Because that those are so messy, I will double this amount because it's $75, so it's $150.
There we go. We'll each do 75. How about that?
Okay, there you go. To the Rape Found. It's called the Rape Foundation.
Rape Foundation for AIDS, everybody.
Yes. Yes.
Alec, do you have any parting words?
I don't. I just, you know, thanks for having me.
Thanks for talking and being vulnerable and opening up.
You're at the Sulk on Twitter.
Although,
for how long, we don't know. Yeah.
But you're Alec Sulkin on Instagram.
That's
and you are
correct.
Posting some pictures on there. Are you on any other social media sites?
No.
That's it?
You're not Snapchatting? I'm not on Facebook. I'm not on Snapchat.
Okay.
No.
Well, thank you again, Alec Sulkin.
Thanks, guys. You're the man. Guy, Eden, thank you.
And thank you for listening
thanks.
To Failing Up.